Everybody, starting a new chapter this week, the halachas concerning animals, livestock, wildlife, creatures, whether you own them, don't own them, let's see, there's halachas involved. So, when it comes to live animals, there are two melachas that need to be taken into account. They're actually not part of the Lamentes melachas. They're learned separately as a issue to do with Shabbos. One is called Mechamer, and the other one is called Shvisas Behema. There are differences between the two, and we will discuss it. So, number one, we deal with Mechamer. Mechamer is when an animal does one of the Lamentes Melachas as a result of my prodding, pushing, or encouraging. Now, animals don't do Lamentes Melachas, but what we mean to say is that when an animal does an action that were I to do it, would be an Issa D'oraisa. So then when the animal does that as a result of my impetus, then that is the Issa of Mechamer. So you can get an animal to walk, you can take him for a walk, but you can't let the animal carry. So therefore, if an animal has a burden on him, we will discuss later on what constitutes a burden, what not, but if he's carrying something, so just like I may not carry, so too an animal may not carry. And therefore, if an animal is carrying something, now because of me, the animal moves, the animal walks, the animal does Akira Vanocha, he lifts off the ground and he moves off from one place and stops in another place, that would be an Isur of Mechamer. Mechamer, what's considered as Mechamer is whether I pull him, push him, use a stick or a whip, a tool, or even if I would shout or scream or call the animal, would also be a problem of Mechamer. The other point of Mechamer is that it is irrelevant of who the animal belongs to. Any animal that as a result of my action is going to do something would be an Isra Mechamer. So even if it was my neighbor's, who was, if I had a Goyish neighbor and his animal was doing something and I encouraged it or got him to do something else, that would be an Isur of Mechamer as well. Where do we learn Mechamer from? Because the Torah says, L'sasekho melacha ata uvehem techa. As I learned that because it says you and your animal together, it's as if they're saying that when there's something that is done in partnership between man and the animal, then that will be considered as an Isur. And they would, so not just as Isurim for me not to do Melametes Melachos, but I can't get an animal to do them on my behalf. I mean, the Isur D'oraisa. Not like Amir Le'akum, tell a goy, and that is the Rabbanon. But getting an animal to do something would be considered as an Isur D'oraisa of Mechamer. That's number one. Again, Mechamer is that as a result of my prodding, my motivation, my impetus, an animal does something which would be also for a Jew to do on Shabbos and Issa D'oraisa. Since he does it because of me, that is an Issa Mechamer, and that applies to any animal, even if it's a goy or hefker or not my animal. The second prohibition that revolves around animals is what we call Shvisas Behema, that your animal needs to keep Shabbos. Now, keep Shabbos, obviously, animal doesn't have to keep Shabbos in the same way I keep Shabbos. He doesn't have to pre-cook all his food and keep it on the platter. An animal can graze in Shabbos, we'll see it in a moment, but we mustn't allow our animals, and here's a question of allowing, and not that we actually actively prodding him or motivating him, but even to do it on his own, we may not allow our animal to get into a situation where he is doing an Isur Melacha. That Isur Melacha could mean like carrying. So if my animal has a burden on him, as I said, we will discuss what constitutes a burden, now I must make sure that my animal doesn't walk in a place without an Eruv, because then he will be carrying. I can't let my animal carry. So it's not, so the difference between Mechamer and Shvisa is Mechamer is I can't prod an animal, and it applies to any animal. Shvisa is my animal, not someone else's, my animal cannot even on his own do something which would be considered for a human as a melacha on Shabbos. This applies even if I'm only a partial owner. If you own an animal in partnership with a goy, that still applies. If you're part of the animal, we don't say like I own the legs and he owns the head. you say every molecule in the animal is owned half-half. So therefore, there's my part of the animal is doing melacha as well. It doesn't make a difference who encourages the animal to do it, whether I'm telling him to do it and I'm also over a mechamer, or someone else, a goy, or he's doing it on his own, even if he's doing it without my knowledge. Because I don't know where my animal is, but we have to make sure that I don't leave my animal in a way that he could go do such a thing. We'll talk about it soon, more specific. And the source of this is Leman Yanuach Shorcha V'Chamarecha. Torah says your ox and your donkey should rest. Therefore, we learn that your animal, an animal that belongs to a Jew, must also, to a certain extent, observe Shabbos. Now, what I mean by a certain extent, I'll explain soon. So, again, we have, when it comes to animals, we have two, sorry, Mechamer is an animal, irrelevant of whose it is, that does something because of my rotting. Shvisas Behema is when my animal should avoid doing things that are also on Shabbos, irrelevant of how it got to do that, but it's my animal. Now, the difference between the way an animal is going to keep Shabbos and a human keep Shabbos is that an animal is only Asur, at least there's no Isur on the animal, obviously. Isur is on the owner. But the Isur of the owner to watch out what his animal does only applies to Isur d'Oraisa and not Isur d'Rabbanan. Therefore, to let an animal do something which is an Isur d'Rabbanan would be Mutter, be permitted on Shabbos. Now, what legabe carrying, what constitutes Rabbanan Daraisa? So we've spoken previously that carrying Daraisa is only when you have a area that is Rishus HaRabim Daraisa. That means that it has to have all the criteria to fit into Rishus HaRabim. And we said that there's four criteria. We said that it needs Dalsus, Ein Dalsus Nilos Belayla. If the doors don't close, it remains open. You need a street that's mafudish, that crosses the city from side to side. You need that the street is 16 amas wide. Then you need 600,000 people to traverse this area in the 24-hour period. Then it gets to Din Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa. If not, it's only D'Rabbanan, it's only a Karmelis. Nevertheless, when it comes to carrying, we're going to be machmir that an animal should not carry in a Karmelis either. Different reasons are given. One of them is because the idea of 600,000 is a machloika, so even if it has the other three, there would also be a Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa and there'd be machmir. So, generally speaking, we're going to be machmir on a Karmelis as well. I have a recollection of seeing a tshuva of Rav Moshe Sternberg, and I once recently looked for it again, I couldn't find it, so I have to check whether I'm recalling correctly, but he wrote his Chedek Aleph. Most of the tshuvas that he has in his Chedek Aleph are written to people in South Africa, where he was Rav in South Africa, and he had a shayla there about a dog going out into the streets on Shabbos, and he was warning that a person has to be careful if he lets his dog out into the streets on Shabbos, that he shouldn't be carrying a tag or something like that, that it would be an isur of Shvisa. At the time, I was quite surprised, because who said the streets are Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa? And now I understand that he is of the opinion, and that seems to be the accepted opinion, that we deal with carrying an animal a little bit more machmir, that even in the Karmelis, which is the one exception to this whole rule that I just said, that is only chayv a daraisis, but a Karmelis is going to be more machmir because there are shittas that it could be a darais. These isurim of machmir and shvisa apply on Yom Tov and Yom Kippur as well. Now, an exception to the rule is if an animal does something for its own gain, does it on his own, for his own gain, then we say that is mutter. For his own benefit, his own enjoyment, we say that's mutter, because after all, as even by us, we say that Shabbos is considered a v'karasa l'Shabbos oinig. Shabbos is supposed to be a day of pleasant, to be pleasant. And if there's going to be tzar involved, then that's not the theme of Shabbos. The one case that we bring it up in relation to humans is someone who is ill, and eating on Shabbos will make him even more ill. There are various cases that are brought. Either he's very sensitive, or he's someone who's got into a routine of not eating during the day and he only eats at night. And now, whatever the case may be, there's a couple of cases brought down in Simon Resh Beches of a person being ill and can't have his Shabbos. So we say he should try. But if it hurts him, so then try and fast. We just said in the Simon before that fasting on Shabbos is asur. Well, the answer is that fasting on Shabbos is also because fasting is generally considered as a tsar. But for someone who fasting is a is enjoyment, meaning for him, fasting, he gets more enjoyment out of fasting than he gets out of eating, because eating causes him pain and discomfort. So then we say Shabbos is made for comfort and not for discomfort, and therefore for him it's better to fast than it is to eat. So to an animal, to tell an animal no eating on Shabbos, that is going to tire the animal. And you don't have to be makbid that the animal always has to be supplied with fodder that is not mukta, but you can let animals go out and graze on Shabbos, and the fact that they're going to be doing tlisha, ktira, while they pull up the grass and the vegetation, that is not a problem, that is lehanos, or that is part of his normal behavior and will be not an isur, as long as the farmer who lets, the owner of the animal lets his animals out, doesn't do it with the intention that, oh, I'm not going to have to mow the lawn on Sunday because I let my goats take care of this field. Wonderful. Now, goats, please go feed in this area so I don't have to bring someone in to mow the lawn. That would be awesome, because then you have a kavana to make a tikkun to the land, which would be awesome. But if it's just he's sending the animals out to graze and the animals are doing it for their own benefit, then that is not a problem, Moshvis. So we said an animal cannot do a melacha. Mechamer is you can't do melacha because you brought it him, or shvisa you can't do melacha because it's yours, but whatever it is, either or, what constitutes a melacha? An example of a melacha is that he can't go out of the burden, and as we said, if it's a burden that he's carrying, we're going to be machmer in Rosh Hashanah and the Karmelis, meaning any place without an eruv. Now what is considered a burden? So we say that something which is a normal protection for the animal is not considered a burden. Just like humans wear clothing and the clothing are then bottled to the human body. So when we go out on Shabbos, if we've got our jacket thrown over our shoulder, so that could be a problem of carrying. But if you're wearing your jacket, that's derech malchus. So the same way we say that clothing for a human being is bottled to the body, so too we're going to say that certain things that animals carry and wear, if they're done for the normal protection, I'm stressing the word normal over here, would then be mutter to do on Shabbos. Now, what is considered protection? Protection is something which is for the good of the animal. For example, in a place where an animal is going to be suffering from cold, and you throw a blanket over him. It's interesting that Mara tells us that a donkey always suffers from cold, and therefore to put a blanket on your donkey is always mutter, even for summer. Or if there's any other tsar the animal is suffering from, perhaps he's going to be attacked by bugs and fleas and whatever, and you put something on him in order to keep him away, that is all for the good of the animal, as well as something that you attach to the animal that he shouldn't run away or get lost, or something which would be, for example, to keep his wool clean. All these are examples of shmira, of protection, normal protection for the sake of the good, for the goodness of the animal. But if it's for other purpose, for example, you put a muzzle on an animal so that he shouldn't eat the neighbor's flowers, or that sees you on your dog says you shouldn't bite people that walk past, then that's not for the goodness of the animal, it's for the goodness of other people, that would be also on Shabbos. So if your dog does tend to bite people and can't let him out without a muzzle, so then you can't let him out, keep him indoors. That'll keep him in an area where there's an eruv. So that's, when we talk about a burden, it has to be something that is not considered the normal protection for the good of the animal. The halacha also brings down something which is an overprotection or an underprotection. It's got to be the normal average, something which is underprotecting. So that's no good, because that's considered as a waste of time, and therefore that will be considered as carrying. And if it's overprotection, then the extra protection is not necessary, only what's normal and what's regular. Now, we said to stop an animal from running away and getting lost would be permitted. Therefore, if an animal needs a collar or a leash of sorts that you tie around the neck, and that way you can keep tabs on it, pun unintended, because we'll deal with a tab in a moment, So then, we'll say that you're smutter to put the rope, chain, leash around the neck of the animal. Not only that, you can even take the animal for a walk through a place that is a Rosh Hasharabim, and it's not considered carrying, and it's not considered leading an animal. There's just a couple of restrictions. Al Samaris Ayin is that when you hold the rope should go into your hand and not stick out the other side, more up to a tefach and not more than that, because then it will be considered an extra rope that you don't need. And also, when there's slack between you and the animal and the rope droops, it shouldn't come to within a tefach of the ground. But then it looks like that it is, that you're, that people don't see that you're pulling an animal, they just think you're walking with a rope and not with an animal. What also a person has to be aware of is that if you're taking your animal out and you're attaching the rope to the neck, you're putting it around the neck, you put the collar on, whatever the case may be, you have to be careful, especially with big animals, that you don't lean on the animal when you attach it, because leaning on your animal is considered as using the animal, which we will see later. We haven't got to that yet, but next week we'll be discussing that. But using an animal on Shabbos is also a problem. To have a tag, tab, a disc, a something like that, that is hanging from the neck of, or from the collar of an animal for identification purposes, even though it's for the sake of that it doesn't get lost, if it gets lost, you'll be able to find it. The person who finds will be able to return it. Nevertheless, that is considered as carrying on Shabbos. Therefore, anybody who has a pet where there is a tag hanging from the collar, then you cannot let that pet go out into a place where there is no Eruv. However, if the tag has been attached in a non-removable fashion to the animal, then it becomes bottled to the goof. So what is considered common is they make a hole in the ear and then put a ring in, staple, some sort of seal, and they put a tag hanging from the ear that we're going to say is bottled to the animal, and then it's not a problem of letting an animal like that go out into a place without an Eruv on Shabbos, because that is not considered carrying. Now, something which is necessary for the animal to wear, something which is necessary for the animal to wear, but we're worried that this item might fall off for whatever reason, and when it falls off, the owner might not put it back on the animal immediately, but rather just carry it with him and carry on going end up carrying it. So then we have a gzera that you should not put such a thing on your animal on Shabbos, because you're worried that it might fall off, you might come to carry it, and therefore don't go up in the first place. So there's a whole list of things in the modern books. They leave them out because it's not so practical, but there's a whole list of things for the Mishnah. Very interesting one is that in order to protect the udder of an animal, they put the skin of a porcupine on over the udder of an animal. That's one of the things, or a kippoid. And one of the things that are brought that it's also to do, because if it falls off, the owner's not going to tie it back on immediately. He might carry it a little bit before he puts it back on, and therefore you worry that he might do that, and therefore we won't allow him to let the animal go out or such a thing. So again, even if it's not considered carrying, because it is part of the normal protection of the animal for the animal's good, but there's a possibility of it falling, so then we're going to say that it's awesome. Another thing discussed in the poskim is an animal with a bell. So there's two issues of an animal with a bell. Number one is the bell itself. When the animal goes out, it rings, and that is Hashmoas Kol, even though that's a Derabbanon, but it's a Maris Ayin, and therefore we don't want an animal to walk around with a bell on Shabbos. If you do have a bell tied into your animal on Shabbos and you don't feel like taking it off, what you can do is you can stuff the bell with cotton wool or some sort of stuff like that, and then it won't ring, so that's fine, at least from the point of view of the fact that it's the noise that it makes. However, there's a second problem, is that it was common practice that when you brought an animal to the marketplace, you brought it with a bell. And therefore, we say that even if you've stuffed the bell that it doesn't ring, nevertheless, to take such an animal out into public is a Maris Ayin, that it looks like you're taking it to the marketplace to sell, and therefore you cannot let an animal walk outside in a public area. Here it has nothing to do with with an Eruv or not an Eruv. Here it has to do with the public. So to walk it through the street, even if there's an Eruv, that's irrelevant. Here it's a question of walking through the street and people seeing it. So people see you walking the animal with a bell. They think you're taking it to the marketplace. We don't want people to think that of you, and therefore would be also to let an animal go out or outdoors into the public area with a bell hanging from its neck. Now, an interesting point is legabe tchum, there is no restriction directly on an animal legabe tchum. Generally speaking, we say that whatever you own has the same tchum as you. An interesting discussion is brought down as far as I remember, but it's tchum. When I take Shabbos, whoever I am and my possessions are, that is their set shvisas makom, this place of Shabbos, and the halachas of Tchum say that I may not go more than 2,000 amos beyond my place where I accept the Shabbos. If I accepted Shabbos in a built-up area, so automatically the built-up area is all considered part of my shvisa, and I get 2,000 amos from the end of the built-up area. So if I'm living in a city, so I can walk till the edge of the city without any problem. When I get to the edge of the city, I've got 2,000 amos. If people remember the early days here in Ramat Beit Shemesh, there was a discussion if you can walk from Ramah Aleph to Ramah Beis. The reason is just because it is under one municipality that Ramah Aleph and Ramah Beis are considered as one city. But rather, the end of a city is when you don't have a continuous line of houses. That the houses now are broken up with more than what's called Shivim v'Shirayim, 70 and 2/3 of an amah. If there's a break of more than 70 and 2/3 of an amah between one property and the next, so then that already constitutes as you have reached the end of the city. So when Ramah Aleph comes to an end, and then you've got the open area before Ramah Beis starts, that halachically makes it that Ramah Aleph is one city and Ramah Beis is another city. Therefore, people who live in Ramah Aleph can walk to the end of Ramah Aleph, and from there they can go up Haim Amon. So they can go to Ramah Beis because it's within the Alpine Amor, but they can't go far in Ramah. You can go maybe to the first or second street, but you can't go any further. And the converse also applies. People who live in Ramah Beis, want to come to Ramah Aleph, can only walk 2,000 amos from the end of Ramah Beis, which might take them till halfway up Kishon or something like that, but they can't come all the way to Revivim. What changed is when you have an Eruv. They built an Eruv around the city, so that makes the city one continuous area, one continuous halachic area, and therefore, so long as you're in the Eruv, you're all considered part of the city, and then you square off the city and you have your 2,000 amos, and that will be an interesting, I don't know if there are available maps and charts to know exactly where the Tchum is, but alright, that is just an outline of Hilchos Tchum on Shabbos. Now, when it comes to Tchum, we say that my belongings have the same Tchum as me. What's a Nafkamina? I'll give an example from Ramah Aleph, from my base. It's a winter Friday night. Someone in Ramah Beis comes to Ramah Aleph for a Shalom Zachar, and it starts howling and pouring, and he wants to get home, and he forgot to take his coat. So he goes to someone at the Shalom Zachar and says, "Can I borrow a coat?" So he should know that the coat can only go as far as the owner can say. This person from Ramah Beis, he just walked to the very first house of Kishon, which within his 2,000 amos. Great. So he comes there, puts on the coat, and now he takes the coat and he goes back home. So when he passes the first street, that's still fine. When he gets to the second street, bang, that's the end of the tchum of the coat. If he lives further down the hill, he cannot take that coat with him because he's taking the coat outside of the tchum of the original owner. That is Hilchos Tchumim when it comes to a person and his belongings. Now, how does it apply to an animal? We're going to say that when it comes to an animal, even though I own an animal, but on a general understanding, animals are not restricted to the tchum. And therefore, if a man wants to let his animals graze on Shabbos, and they're going to now graze and leave the tchum, that is absolutely no problem on Shabbos. Not only that, if your animal is outside the tchum and you want it to come back to the farmhouse, you can stand outside and whistle and call and whatever you do to get him to come back by making noises. You can't leave the tchum and pull him in, but you're not allowed to leave the tchum. But you're allowed to encourage him somehow, you know, hang up his favorite carrots. You can get him to come back into the tchum. Not only that, if you gave your animal to a goy, and the goy is going to be using the animal in a way that is not a problem of Israel Shabbos, he wants to ride the animal. Riding the animal is not a problem of a burden, because we pass in the halacha, chai noset atzmoy, a living being has his own propulsion. He carries himself. How that works in physics, I don't know, but that's at least how it works in halacha, that a person who can walk, so if he's riding, he's not considered as using the, is not considered a burden to the beast that is carrying him, but rather he is self-propelled. Why I say can walk, because if a person can't walk, or if a person is tied up, or you're talking about a baby who can't yet walk, so then he will be a burden. It's not just every living being, but a living being who can walk. So now when he's on an animal, he's not considered as riding the animal. Therefore, riding an animal from the point of view of a yid riding an animal on Shabbos is only nisah d'rabbanan. With midaraisa, you're not getting the animal to carry you. With d'rabbanan or shemi, that's my rush. You might go too far. You might take a branch from a tree, whatever the case may be, while they were gozing. Memena. To let a goy ride my animal is not a problem. My animal's not doing him a lot. As long as the goy doesn't hang anything on the animal, like he decides he's wearing his scarf and decides to put the scarf over the animal. Now the animal is wearing the scarf, that isn't carrying. So he's carrying a 80 kilo goy on his back, that's not considered carrying. Take off the 800 gram scarf and put it around his neck in the middle of the summer, that is considered as carrying. But that is the halacha. Remember, when you get your animal to ride, when you get it, if you let a goy ride your animal, you're allowed to let him ride it outside the school. What you cannot do is you cannot actually physically encourage the animal to leave the tomb. You can't lead it or push it out of the tomb. If it goes, and to call it to come back, it can come back, but you can't push it out to go outside. Halachically speaking, what we don't generally allow a yid to rent out or to lend a beast of burden to a goy for over Shabbos, even if you sent it on a long-term contract and you sent it out for 10 days and you gave it to him on a Sunday and it's going to be over Shabbos, and even if you tell him do not use it on Shabbos, we don't trust him because the goy doesn't see that that is considered as illegal use. It says, I rented an animal for plowing and I know he's charging me for 6 out of 7 days, but no, I'll use him the 7th day and pay him. I don't see that that's considered as stealing. When I give a animal to a shepherd and I tell him, look after my animal, let him graze, and the shepherd goes and rides on the animal and I catch him, so he'll feel guilty because that's not what he was given him. But when I give an animal to a goy and to plow his field and I catch him using on a day that I thought it not, he says, come on, this is a plow animal. So, okay, I'll pay you for another. He doesn't see anything wrong with it. Therefore, telling him don't use it is not enough of an incentive, and therefore one should not lend or rent out and beast of burden to be used by a goy on Shabbos, even if it's a horse that he's going to ride on. As I said, it's not so far true. There's no issue of the goy riding on the horse, but comes with the riding. He's got his bundle with him, and he's got his water bottle with him, and he's got his scarf, whatever it is, and that he might put on the animal in a way that would be considered carrying, and therefore not so far. Therefore, we don't allow the renting out of an animal on Shabbos. We're not going to spend too much time on this particular case because today that is very irrelevant. All the types of malachas that people rented out and lent animals for don't exist today, because when you rent out your tractor to do plowing or you rent out your car for someone to go driving, there's no issur shvis on the car. So if I rent my car or lend my car to a goy and he drives on Shabbos, there's absolutely no problem. There's no shvisus kelim, there's only shvisus behemah. A car is a kli. True, Peshama holds it is shvisus kelim, but we don't ask for it. And therefore, you may rent out or lend out a utensil that's going to be used for a isur to a goy, because there's no shvisus kelim. Therefore, the whole idea of lending out an animal for work doesn't exist today. You lend an animal because you want to have a pet in your house or something like that. No, you're not going to do work with it. So it's not too relevant. We have another 2 minutes. Let's see. Malachas. One is that the Isur of Shvisa, my animal must not do a malacha, applies even if I've rented it out to a goy. That means if I rent out my animal to a goy, I can't let the goy do a malacha to it, with it. And even though there is an opinion that when someone rents an item, he makes a kinyan on it, but there's a machlokes as to how that kinyan works, and therefore l'gavi Shabbos, we're going to say that we're going to be machmir, and just because a goy rented my animal, even long term, it is still my animal, therefore I cannot let the guy do a malacha with a chance. And the other thing I want to mention is that if an animal is owned in partnership, we mentioned at the beginning, an animal that's owned in partnership also has an issur of it being used. So if a goy and a yid buy an animal in partnership and he says, you use it on Sunday, I use it on Monday, you on Tuesday, me off, etc., and he says, okay, Shabbos, the yid says, I can't do malachas on Shabbos, so Shabbos is your day, that doesn't help, because when the animal does malacha on Shabbos, that is problematic for the yid to allow his animal to do malachas on Shabbos, and therefore it doesn't help to have a goyish partner for the Shabbos. There are ways of getting out of it, is that you make kinyanim with a goy that he owns the animal fully for Shabbos. It's not that you own the partnership that I own half-half and I get half the use, but rather there's a day where he owns it fully and gets the full use, and I own it fully and I get the full use. It's a complicated situation how to deal with it, since it's not very relevant. So the bottom line is that if you do get into such a situation, go speak to a competent Orthodox rabbi for guidance in how to deal with it. Otherwise, we'll just say that. Just know that just because you own it in partnership doesn't mean that it has a goyish owner and it can do malach and Shabbos. No, it's still considered yours. And there's an Isra of Shvis. And with that, we wish you all a wonderful day. And it's a shame we'll meet again next time.
Thank you.